great to connect with you again, man.
I just appreciate your perspective, and it's just cool the serendipity of the Bucks being in it now. That's another part of this is, you know, reconnecting with my birth family happened like right during this. You know, I met my half-sister on New Year's Eve 2011 into 2012. It was so surreal to actually have met my birth mom. So this is exciting for me, both on, you know, the actual game level, but then in my life, I'm meeting someone who gave birth to me and then gave me up, lost it, lost. She willingly gave her child up for adoption, knowing she'd never meet me. As a kid, my sister, it was like a secret between my mom, my birth mom, and my sister. They would pray on December 5th that I'd be okay. And then my sister would always say, "Mom, why can't I meet him?" You know, because it was a closed adoption. And so my mom, you know, had to sign away any sort of pursuit of me ever. And so she did. But then this is what she told my sister. She said, "I believe one day he will come to me." And so during that season, when we were doing Los Locos, is when I got the chance to go come and meet her. She had dementia. And so this was the kind of the bittersweet part of it. I did get to come and say, "Thank you for giving me this wonderful life," in person, to which my sister absolutely bawled her eyes out. She couldn't believe this because her mom said, "No, he will come to me." And I actually did.
And talk about a spark, man. I mean, that's just, you know, it's incredible the things that happen. You know, a spark in one area of your life feeds a spark over here, and that burns, and then that feeds over. It's a wildfire that can happen.
Yeah. And then this is where it gets really interesting, is that was a week later, we had the warmest 2012 on record. It was like 80 degrees every day. I'd been training for a 7K. It was called the Get Lucky Race. And then my sister came to that race, and she came here. And the end of the story goes, when I gave my baby picture to my mom and showed her and said, "Thank you for giving me this wonderful life," she didn't say anything because she's, again, incapable of sort of talking for the most part. She was physically healthy and fine, but she didn't have any way to receive, at least at that point. And I thought, well, that's okay. I have peace in my heart. But during that time when my sister came, the very last day, my now brother-in-law, who I just said met, said, "Hey, I just got to tell you the story. You won't believe what just happened." After this church service that they were at that point, she still kind of knew her daughter. And so she said, where's Tracy, my sister? "Well, she's in Minnesota visiting your son." And he said it was like she came out of her shell, looked at him and goes, "He came to me."
That's awesome.
And I fell over. It was incredible, the spine-tingling aspect of actually having something like that important to me just happen. It's magic, and I don't know what else to say, but thank you, and I'm just grateful. And all of that was happening just so condensed in this team. It was just sparks flying everywhere. And
that's cool.
I can't help but smile. But this is where I want to transition and talk about, as we dedicated a lot of this to John Castillo, who was lost this year, tragically, in 2020. But at that same season, one of the games, I believe it was the Toga night, maybe it was a Lab Coat night, our mutual friend, who we had been spending time with actually in late 2011, our friend Jeremy Erickson, got some bad news fall of 11 that he was going to need a bone marrow transplant. His cancer had come back, and he was my best friend. And I never forget the night he came with some friends to the Los Locos, and it was peak. I mean, it was 150 people in the section that night. It was awesome. And I never forget because, well, you remember Crunch would come up and he'd give you the headphones and you would just beat that drum, dude.
It was awesome. I remember the video of my head in the drum,
yes,
with the headphones on, head banging to that thing.
And Jeremy absolutely would just, incredible. It was such a trip for Jer to be a part of that. I remember him calling Crunch Crush. He's like, "Crush." Yeah. I love that Crush guy. And anyways, on one hand, I'm having this electric positivity going on. And one thing I just, you know, a lot of people, I'm trying to do this to kind of share who I am. And I'm not just the excited guy. Like, I have this other side of me that's very deep and serious. And Jer was like, kind of knew that side of me. And then that spring, and then, you know, in June, he passed. And I'll never forget, you know, just how precious he was to me. And when you're in it and when you're with them and they're alive in 2010, 2011, before the cancer came back, you didn't realize like he could be gone tomorrow. And so how do you deal with that? I mean, you know, you've lost other friends, I'm sure, maybe not, but I Jeremy was the closest thing I'd ever had to, you know, he was my best friend. And to lose that person was just, ugh, wrecked me.
It ripped a part of my soul, too. I don't think I was as close to Jeremy as you were, Mark, but I was really close to the guy. He shared some life-changing advice with me once. There was a lot of turmoil. There was a lot of anger that had come out for various different reasons at that time. And some of the advice he gave, I still remember it to this day. Yeah, I remember the day of his funeral. I felt physically sick. And I know a lot of other people, I'm sure, felt infinitely worse. But it was hard for me to feel that much pain for someone that was, you know, a friend. I mean, when my father passed away, that was the hardest thing for me.
Yeah,
for sure. But Jeremy's was a close second.
Yeah,
for sure.
The good news is, various times in my life, I didn't necessarily process the grief and loss when I was in it right after Jer passed. But there's a couple different things where I was actually, this is way pre-COVID, of course. You know, I'm not even family, but I got to be in the room, you know, near the end. It was maybe a week before, not even a week before. And it was just a really, really, you know, again, you talk about emotions coming out. I was so angry because I felt like the doctor came in and asked us what the dose should be. And I was like, excuse me? And of course, I'm not family, so I'm not supposed to say anything, but I was livid. And I remember running out of there and just like yelling on the mall there by the McNamara Center at U of M campus. And I was just so angry. And really what was happening was I was realizing I'm losing my best friend. And to face that is so tough. And then you have to let go. And that's really the hardest thing, is to actually allow, you know, death is a part of life. Life on this planet, as we know it, as far as I'm concerned, it's not forever. But today I'm reminded once again, this is the kind of an anniversary when he had passed. Know, love, and treasure those you've got before they're gone. It's kind of like the big yellow taxi. You don't know what you got till it's gone. And man, I'll never forget when you talk about a conversation. Jeremy was, he would get with you and do the thing that you wanted to do with him. And of course he loved music. So, and we both love music. And you know, there was music is always a part of things. And so I remember the last time we got together, he played a song. It was Newton Faulkner's I Need Something. And I didn't know who Newton Faulkner was, but he would always introduce me to something or whatever. And then I remember he sat me down after he played that. And he said to me, Mark, you know what? He goes, you know that side view mirror in a car? Objects in your mirror may be closer than they appear. He literally seriously looks at me and goes, that's a lot of people's problem. They don't see what's behind. He's like, you have the other problem. You look out in front of you and you're this visionary. And it's like Las Vegas or this big, tall thing in the future. And you think it's right there, but it's further away than you can see it. And so just know that's kind of who you are. You see things that are way in the distance, but they feel like for you, they're right there. And that was the last conversation we really had. And it was just like, I'll never forget it. And so all that to say, you know, losing that is tough. Letting go of that is tough. But man, I'm thankful for a place now to even just share this kind of memory, you know? So anyways, I love just living life. And Jeremy's last thing, you know, he would sign stuff, you know, because he was kind of a rock star in this sort of small Roseau, Minnesota way.
He was. We were all little fangirls. I mean, we were all little teenage fangirls, Jeremy Erickson, let's be honest.
Well, I mean, he would just remember, man. 93 Fly Convention. That's the day I met him. That was when I was carrying a camera around everywhere. Filmed everything. Mark Haugen, the camera guy, big hold VHS bad boy. And I remember seeing him practice on his guitar. I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm playing for the talent show tonight." And I'm like, "Cool." He and this Eddie Britz go and play, or Andy Britz play this duet called Shade Tree. And the girls, oh, they were just in love. The guy just, oh, yeah. He's just such a ham.
We're all jealous. That's really what it is.
Exactly. So his deal, he was funny. He was charming, but then he was serious. He would sign stuff and he would say, now live. Because even in the midst of his pain and all the bleep he had to go through, the 78 chemo treatments or whatever the hell it was, man, he just knew the most important thing was to tell his friends, just live, you know? And that's why, you know, I just continue to, like, hopefully carry that torch, you know, for as long as I live. Because I'm not getting any younger, but I'm not getting any older. I'm going to be a kid and live and do Los Locos and be a crazy forever. I love it.
It's great. Love it.
So, yeah. So, wow, that was a quick second segment. I can't believe we're through it. Talk about your jam that year.
That Matt Carney album, City of Black and White, and that one song, the title track for that album.
Yep.
I think I listened to it over and over and over again. That was a time when I had some health problems too, and I was trying to get healthy. I was riding my bike a ton, getting up early at 4 o'clock in the morning, taking the first train into Minneapolis.
Yep.
And just biking, listening to music and everything. He reminded me a lot of Jeremy and his stuff. Jeremy, of course, didn't have the success of Matt Carney.
Right.
But it really, he had such a way of creating a song that was catchy and yet meaningful in the lyrics. It was amazing.
This whole city's black and white. Tell me, what is your color? 'Cause it'd be the same as mine. Faded greens and blue street lights. This red fire burning from the sea up to the sky. I don't wanna wait until tomorrow. Tell you how I feel the rest of my life. You don't wanna waste another minute when you realize I'm walking on the dark side of the evening. Maybe it was you. Open my eyes, burning like a fire on the water. The city of black and white. Won't you just stay? Won't you just stay? I'm on the top still looking down. If you're coming up to me, it's where the whole world wants to be found. In coffee brown, this white flag waving where my heart is on the ground. 'Cause I don't want to wait until tomorrow. Tell you how I feel the rest of my life. You don't want to waste another minute when you realize I'm walking on the dark side of the evening. Maybe it was you. Open my eyes, burning like a fire on the water. City of black and white. Won't you just stay? Won't you just stay? Won't you just stay now? Where the light goes under a dark street. Knows, take my hand and I'll carry you. You can carry me. 'Cause I don't want to wait until tomorrow. Tell you how I feel the rest of my life. You don't want to waste another minute when you realize